This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Live Bet Saturday continues. I'm Dustin Sweetelson hanging out with you from the Circa Sportsbook. He's Mark Melusis. And this Military Bowl, every time we think we have it figured out, something else happened. East Carolina with an interception. They returned it deep into Pitt territory, settle for a field goal, which now makes it a two-score game. Pirates up 23-14. ECU is laying 6.5. They closed as 12.5-point dogs. That total back up to 43.5. And moments ago, we bet Pitt on the money line minus 114. You can now get them 6-1 if you really like the Panthers. 6-1 right now, Moose.
No, it's money gone, Dustin. That's money I just lit on fire. That's gone. And it was a terrible pass and an interception that was picked off by East Carolina. But the Pitt Panthers, they've turned the ball over 5 times in this game. And they're down 9 with about a tad under 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. But we've seen crazy things in college football. I just don't see Pitt all of a sudden rallying back from right now. If you like East Carolina, you got to lay 1,000. They're at minus 1,000 on the money line to win the game.
They were plus 370 on the money line to win it pre-flop. This game's been crazy. I mean, Jakarian Turner, the running back, has a couple of fumbles on the day. Kenny Johnson with a fumble. Mason Heinstuhl, you mentioned the interception for him. Only 16 of 27, a buck 64, a touchdown and a pick for him. The touchdown was brilliant. And whatever the opposite of brilliant is whatever that interception was that set up that score for ECU. But you know what? With as drunk as this game has been for the last like 45 minutes or so, I'm not going to rule out Pitt coming back and winning this thing. If they get a crazy score, a stop and a score, all of a sudden we're looking at a Pitt Panthers field goal walk-off win. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. It doesn't feel likely, but this game has been wacky for the last few
seconds. No, it's been crazy, but think about this. I mean, Pitt has done everything they can to basically give this game away. The 5 turnovers. East Carolina's 2 of 14 on third downs. And they're still up 9 with under 7 minutes to go in the game. Like, it's crazy. And Pitt has outgained them. They're out 17-13, I think, when you're looking at first downs on the afternoon. It's been a strange one. It really is. It's one of those ones that Pitt's going to look back on with the one pick thrown and the 4 fumbles lost as one that they gave away.
And Ray, this is another example of, oh, you want to bet on college football bowl games in the year of our Lord 2025? Well, we went through it earlier. ECU without their starting quarterback, Caden Hauser, transfer portal, without Yannick Smith, their second leading receiver, without their running back, London Montgomery, leading rusher, 742 yards, 7 touchdowns. They lost their left tackle to the portal. They lost a tight end to the portal. And they're up 23-14 on a Pitt team that has guys sitting out that aren't available, but still a lot more talent than ECU should have, yet it's ECU that is winning up 23-14 with 6 minutes and 23 seconds remaining. So the number moved. We were 10.5 yesterday. It got up to 12.5 today. And if you took it with ECU, despite all those opt-outs and transfers, you're sitting in a good position right now. But when it comes to betting these bowls, you think you know the information, that doesn't mean the bet is going to come to fruition.
No, true. And, you know, it's even as we touched upon earlier on, Dustin, you mentioned in that opening segment, it's kind of a roll of the dice, you know, and we've got, especially with the focus now being on the college football playoffs, with guys deciding to enter the transfer portal, which opens up January 2nd, or maybe make their names eligible for the upcoming NFL draft in the spring. It's not exactly the teams that we saw throughout the course of the season. So it's a little bit of a guessing game when you get into some of these college football bowl games. It's unfortunate. And, you know, you hit upon it, the Neuheisel kind of example that he threw out there, what he would do and maybe have these bowl games before the start of the season, bring some importance back to some of these games that have got a little bit of history to them, to where then the teams are all locked in and ready to go.
Yeah, you just change the name of your at a conference. Everything's going to be at a bowl instead of like the opening kickoff, the Chick-fil-A opening kickoff. It's going to be the Peach Bowl at the beginning of the season. You just rebrand it. It's the same thing. It's Nebraska taking on a team like Arizona State to open the season. You just call it a different bowl game. I think that's an easy solution. By the way, don't look now, but Pitt at the 32-31 yard line of ECU, threatening to score with just under 5 minutes to go. And they just threw it on 2nd and 7 short of the sticks. So that'll bring up like a 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3. For the Pitt Panthers offense, as they trail 23-14. We're about to have the second half get underway at Yankee Stadium, the Pinstripe Bowl. Penn State up 6-3 on Clemson. Penn State's laying 2.5, and that total is 29.5. Even at 29.5, Mark, I still think the under's playable. Those dudes, I'm looking at them. One, they're miserable to be playing in this bowl game. They thought they'd be playing on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. Secondly, the weather, the cold, a baseball stadium. I don't think we're getting a lot of excitement the rest of the way, although I thought that was what was going to happen in the Military Bowl as well.
Yeah, but these are two programs that entered it, and they've had guys, obviously, that have taken a step away from the program from a player perspective. We ran through it earlier on, and there's extreme amount of talent when you're looking at the Clemson Tigers. But two programs that are obviously looking to add higher hopes coming into the season. And what you've seen, Penn State done in by drops. Klubnik has underthrown guys throughout the course of the first half. It's cold. It's miserable. Snowstorm just hit the tri-state area in the East Coast last night. You got 6 to 8 inches of snow. They were digging out the stadium this morning to make sure and get the field ready. The field looks like it's not exactly emblematic of a pure, it's not like it's Pasadena and the Rose Bowl dusting this afternoon at Yankee Stadium where it looks like a thing of beauty. It looks absolutely miserable out there, and the guys are playing like it's a miserable atmosphere as well.
Yeah, but here's Pitt playing for pride, trying to get on the board, because if they can score all three timeouts, get a stop at ECU, I think we'll struggle to put the game away unless they have some trick plays up their sleeve. If Pitt can score here, it could be interesting. Here's Heinstuhl with a big run. He picks up the first down, and now they're probably within the 10-yard line, it looks like. I want to say he went down right around the 10. Pitt threatening, but we're under 3 minutes to go. ECU down to a 2.5-point favorite, total of 43.5. You can get Pitt money line 6.5-1. I wouldn't necessarily jump at it because we got a bad number, but hey, crazier things have happened. It feels like the Belk Bowl from back in the day all over again. One of the most crazy endings of all time. Penn State has the football, I believe, right now with Clemson. So they're up 6-3, their first drive of the second half there. But to me, it's about the Military Bowl and what's going to go down here. While we have a break in the action, though, we should look ahead. The Fenway Bowl is about to get going in Boston. UConn and Army beginning in about 10 minutes. Army's up to an 8.5-point favorite, so it moved a point in 24 hours. That total staying at 41.5. And just on the way these two games went, Mark, with the weather, with the cold, you factor in UConn doesn't have their quarterback, and Army is a triple option team. I feel like the under's the way to go. I locked in under 41.5 in Army and UConn.
Yeah, I would like that as well, Dustin. I'd lean the under in the game. I'd lean Army in the game as well, with the UConn head coach leaving and obviously taking the job out there in, what was it, Colorado State, I believe, when you're looking at Jim Mora Jr. And he's leaving the UConn program. You look at Army. Army has turned that program around the last 4 or 5 years. And you and I grew up going up to Mikey Stadium when we were kids and stuff like that and taking in Army football, which is a tremendous experience. Got to go up to West Point. But I would lean Army in the game, laying the 8.5, and I agree with you. I'd side to not seeing a ton of points in this game. I don't know how much pushback you're going to get from the UConn Huskies.
No. Gordon Samis, the offensive coordinator, is going to be the interim head coach. UConn's got 15 guys in the portal, including Joey Fagnano. They've got 3 O-linemen missing. They're starting corner, starting linebacker. Their running back, Cam Edwards, says he's going to play, but top wide receiver, Sky Bell, consensus, first-team All-American. It looks like it originally was reported he was going to play, but I don't believe he's going to give it to go. Quarterback's going to be Nick Evers. Started back in 24. Dual threat, but there's a reason why he didn't retain that job. UConn 8-4 to the over this year, but that's not their roster that's playing today. It's mostly backups. Army 8-4 to the under. That's why I think the under ends up holding true in the Fenway Bowl right now. All right, let's see, Pitt. Can you keep us alive? Can you give us a chance? I just like a little bit of drama here. Find the end zone. You make it a 23-21 game. You get a stop. And then you need a field goal for the win. I mean, that's the way this thing should shake out if Pitt's going to get it done. 2nd and 10 coming for them from the 11-yard line, Moose. Big set of downs, and the game is on the line, essentially.
Yeah, you'd want to, but at worst, you got to settle and get the field goal to make it a 23-17 game. And then all of a sudden, and you want to score on this side of the 2-minute warning, even though you have the 3 timeouts. So you have a little bit more wiggle room to play with. So it's interesting with the new rules where the clock stops if you generate a first down, get out of bounds, obviously. But you'd love to see Pitt here score a touchdown and really put this one in doubt for East Carolina.
Oh, they run a zone read with 2:05 to go in the game, and Heinstel's brought down, so they're not going to be able to utilize the two minute warning there. It's going to hit at 1:58. It should probably hit at 2 minutes. I think they're going to have to put a couple seconds on the clock, but that's massive. Everything you just said was correct. You need to score on this side of the 2 minute warning, hoping to use it to your advantage. Instead, now it's stopping the clock. You have a couple less seconds to play with to help you get into field goal range. But if you don't score a touchdown on a third and goal here, you settle for the field goal, and now you're making your work harder. Less time, and you have to go more yards, and you have to actually find the end zone. Don't love it for Pitt in that spot. Odds still up on the board. ECU's laying 2.5. It's +154. Total's 43.5. And ECU, who closed as a 12.5-point underdog, is now -1850 to win the game outright.
Yeah, listen, I think Pitt's going to score here. And the fact of, and it'd be a little bit more concerning, Dustin, if they didn't have their all three timeouts, but they do have all three timeouts, and they're not going to be running it on any of the ensuing downs. So they got a second and goal inside the 2 yard line. You'd imagine it's going to be two pass plays. As long as they, you know, are able to score on the next two downs, they make it a one score game, kickoff, use three timeouts. East Carolina, you imagine, is going to try and run it all three times. If they get a first down, then the game's going to be over. If they don't, Pitt's going to have an opportunity, maybe with a field goal late, to win it.
Yeah, I didn't like that RPO call. I would have had Heinstel.
I didn't love that either.
I would have had him roll out and give him some options to work with instead of doing that fake handoff, which slows things up so the defenders can close in on him. And that's how we ended up in this scenario. So we'll give you the end of the Military Bowl, the Pinstripe Bowl in the second half as well, plus the Fenway Bowl about to get going. He's Mark. I'm Dustin. Stay with us on Live Bet Saturday.
This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Live Bet Saturday. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with Mark Malusis here. We've got you covered here in this early window as the Pitt Panthers, a comedy of errors at the
what
end
are they
of
doing,
this
Dustin?
Game. ECU up 23-14. Pitt had the football. They're in the red zone, and they can't get out of their own way. Running an RPO on the wrong side of the two-minute warning, which then negates the two-minute warning being used. Heinstel trying to run the football, not getting rid of it. Clock keeps ticking. They finally settle for a field goal to make it 23-17, but there's a minute 23 to go, and they're going to have to use their timeouts to get a stop, and they're also going to have to go the distance of the field wherever they get the football to try and score a touchdown, because you and I both know this. The art of the onside kick is essentially dead for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part. Not yeah. I mean, and the rules and player safety is basically taking that out of the impact and out of the role where you can't, you know, you can't line 10 guys up on one side and or 9 guys up on one side and be able to go after it like you could be able to do years ago. And and that was as bad of an onside kick as it didn't even go 10 yards. The onside kick just went 6 yards. But back to the Pitt here for a second. Like, can you explain to me, like, You have a second and goal. You're at the 5 yard line. If you are the quarterback, how exactly do you run and not throw the ball away, understanding that the clock is not your friend? The clock is your enemy, and he is not Michael Vick. He gets tackled in bounds. The clock is running. You have 3 timeouts. You can't use one of those timeouts. You have to throw the ball away. Getting in, and then you throw a 3rd down incomplete pass. You end up settling for a field goal. It's almost like they should have went back to the 2 minute warning, kicked the field goal there. They would have put themselves in a better opportunity than where they are right now.
Yeah, and Heinstel, the quarterback, he's at the sideline. So it's not even like it was hard to get the ball out of bounds. You were sitting in the pocket and you were scared of an intentional grounding. Everything was set up for you to just get rid of the football, throw it through the end zone. He had about 3 different options: get out of bounds, throw it out of bounds, throw it through the end zone. All of it would have worked. Instead, he did the only thing he couldn't do, which was take a hit and a sack, and that kept the clock going. And now with a minute 23 to go, they're in desperation mode. Onside kick, a complete failure. ECU with the football. They're up by 6. By the way, if ECU, just breaks off one into field goal range, it's essentially over as well right now. East Carolina has the football at the Pitt 43-ish yard line right now. So, they could
The onside kick didn't even go 10 yards. It went 8 yards. So there was no way for Pitt to be able to handle it. And here's the other thing, Dustin. I don't understand here where I get the opportunity to try and get the ball back with the onside kick, but you mentioned it before. The odds of getting it now in today's day and age with the new rules are slim to none. With all three timeouts, I could understand if you only had two time. With all three timeouts, why not kick it deep? You know what they're going to do. Now all of a sudden, you why not kick it deep?
You're right.
You know you got to get a stop.
The mindset has to shift. Once you settle for the field goal, you have to accept the situation you're in, which is we have to trust our defense. So you might as well put the defense in the best position possible, kick it deep. And by the way, it's the last game of the year. You don't have some special punt return package built in, something tricky to throw them off the scent if you need to call it in your back pocket. Like, I'm with you. Once you settle for the field goal, you can't go, eh, we're still going for the win in the onside kick. Kick it deep. Three timeouts, trust your defense to get a stop. You pay a defensive coordinator for a reason, even though it's his last game with the program. But you get what I'm saying. Like you and this isn't, by the way, an epidemic that's happening in the NFL. The lack of trust in your defense with the going forward on fourth down and the goal to go situations instead of taking points or flipping the field. At some point, I think everything's got to revert back. We have to start trusting defenses to make plays for us because those guys get paid to play football too.
Yeah, and the game management that we see. Oh. And sometimes, you know, people overthink it or coaches overthink it. And East Carolina with a big 7-yard run on first down. So they've got two plays to gain 3 yards. And if they do, this game's over. I mean, button it up. I think Pitt at the end here, it was just dopey football. It really was. From the play calls offensively to not understanding the game situation and what's going on here. And East Carolina now forces Pitt to use another timeout. They're facing a third. They lost 2 yards on it. So they're facing a 3rd and 5, 1:07 to go in the game. East Carolina nursing a 6-point lead with a 3rd and 5 in Pitt territory.
Maybe someone can help me out on Twitter at VEASAN Live, at Dustin Sweetelson, at Mark Malusis. I'm trying to come up with a trifecta here, but there are I know there's two college football coaches that can't manage the clock or situations. One of them, Mario Cristobal, we touched on earlier. Pat Narduzzi for Pitt would be the other one where I've had bets that looked like that they were cashing, and Pat Narduzzi has found ways to not cover in the most miraculous ways possible. There's got to be a third. Who is the third in college football that you can't
trust? That's a good one.
I feel like Franklin for a while was that, but we can't do it with Franklin because he just started at Virginia Tech. He would normally be my third. There's got to be a third coach that you don't trust as ECU with a 3rd and 5 runs it to the left, and they're going to be short. Pitt's going to stop the clock. However, what do you do if you're ECU? I don't know if you can kick a field goal that far. What are we looking at? A 36? That like a 53? Yeah, he's not kicking a 53-yarder.
No, he's not kicking a field goal.
ECU is going to have to punt it, and they're going to have to trust their defense. Okay, what are the odds right now? We saw Pitt at one point at 6-1. They're 18-1. I know I keep talking us into Pitt, and we keep losing on Pitt. But with 1:04 to go, they're 18-1, and a touchdown wins it. Or a touchdown, a PAT wins it. I'm not going to bet it. I'm just pointing it out for the content. They're 18-1 right now if something crazy happens.
Can I throw something crazy out here? If I were East Carolina on this 4th down, I think it's about 4th and 2.5.
Yeah.
I got the game a 4th and 3. I would actually go for it.
I actually, you know what? That might be what they're discussing right now. And Pitt, by the way, just went up to Pitt just went up to 20-1. 20-1 right now. And ECU, I think you're right. I think they're going to leave the offense. They're going to play to win the game.
Because what am I gaining if I punt the ball? In all likelihood, I'm punting the ball into the end zone, right? Sure. Unless I've got, you know, I don't got Ray Guy. Guy back there punting.
I'm seeing the punter. Never mind. The punter's out there.
They are punting.
I thought they were keeping the offense out there.
I would make the argument, Dustin. I would go for it here on 4th down.
I don't disagree.
If I were an East Carolina coach, because I end the game's over. I got 3 yards. Line up. We go. Let's end the game right here. We win it.
And you called it punt into the end zone. So you got Pitt, and Pitt just went down to 9-1. 18-1 to 20-1 to 9-1. You know what? I won on the under. We lost the half unit. Maybe on Pitt if they don't win. Why not double down, do the rest of that unit, and maybe less than a half a unit. On 9-1 on Pitt. Let's have a little fun in the final minute of this game. This game has been crazy. It's made no sense. And I keep referencing it, but it's off the board here. See, Vegas is different. DraftKings still has it up at 9-1. DraftKings still has it up 9-1. Does anyone have this game available? Because it was 20-1 a moment ago. They have to go 80 yards. It's a lot. Under a minute left, 57 seconds remaining. Can they do it against what will be a soft defense, just throwing underneath? But you can't throw to the tight end. Oh, my God. You got to throw to someone with some speed who can get out of bounds or move the chains. You can't throw to the running back over the middle. Not that Heinstel, a freshman, you can tell he really doesn't know how to manage the game in situations. So maybe a blessing. We did not bet on Pitt once again as he throws it deep. And that's an incompletion on second and five. There's only 29 seconds to go.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, especially over the middle of the field, you can't throw it to the tight end with obviously no timeouts at all either. It's a strange game. Each team has made some kind of mind-numbing decisions in terms of game management here. East Carolina with the six-point lead, Pitt facing a third and five at about their own 25-yard line.
Wow. All right. The next two plays will decide the game if they can't pick up a first down on third and five. They're at their own, as you mentioned, 25. I mean, you're facing a soft defense that's not going to bring pressure, you don't think. You got to find someone over the middle.
Got to find someone on the outside. I mean, that's basically it. It's got to be a quick hitter. But here's the thing. They're facing a defense as well where East Carolina is dropping everyone back.
Yep.
So, they're only rushing four. So they're flooding each and every zone. But you got to find a guy that has some space and your quarterback's got to have some time to be able to get him the football.
All right. They're right around midfield, but there's only 18 seconds to go. And I don't know if Heinstel has the arm to reach from there. So they're probably going to need to pick up another first down through the air with 18 seconds remaining. And here it is, first and 10, and he chucks it deep and he misses a guy. So 11 seconds to go. We're probably looking at two more plays left. There's a flag on that play. Uh-oh, ECU players talking.
Defensive penalty.
That might be on the defense, might give him another 10 yards, which, I mean, it's still going to be, they're still up against it to score. Oh, nope, it's on Pitt. Looked like offensive pass interference on Pitt. So that's going to make it a lot harder.
Push the defensive back down. Yeah.
Yeah. This one's basically over unless they have some crazy hook and ladder up their sleeve that we're not anticipating. But ECU is going to end up winning his 12.5-point dogs plus 370 on the money line if they get it done in the next play or two here with 11 seconds remaining in the Military Bowl. So we'll bring you what happens there. We have the end of the Pinstripe Bowl. Penn State leads Clemson 6-3. They're laying 2.5, totals 21.5. And the Fenway Bowl is about to get underway at Fenway Park, Army and UConn. We've got it all covered right here on Live Bet Saturday.
This is Live Bet Saturday on VSAN, the Sports Betting Network.
Live Bet Saturday rolls on. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. He's Mark Malusis. The final in the Military Bowl. Unfortunately, Pitt unable to make anything happen at the end. 23-17. ECU with the win is 12.5-point dogs. Plus 370 on the money line. Our under does cash. However, our bet on Pitt in-game does not get home. That's the college football right now. We'll have more on the bowl games coming up a little bit later, but it's time to talk about a really good Saturday doubleheader in the National Football League to help us do that. We're going to go to the Progressive Guest Line. Welcome in Matt Sims, former NFL quarterback trainer. You hear him on SiriusXM, ESPN, and Sims Complete Podcast with his pops, Phil, and he joins us now here on Live Bet Saturday. Matt, thanks for doing this, man. And when it comes to the Texans and the Chargers, I want your perspective on this as a quarterback. When you're watching this defensive unit for Houston, what are the challenges that Justin Herbert's going to have taking on that front, that secondary that Houston brings to the table in this instance?
Yeah, well, Houston's just one of those relentless defenses where there is no plays off. And as for a quarterback, I mean, you always just have to have the antennas up and ready to go. You're constantly checking your protections to make sure that you are protecting yourself and staying upright. And that's always a tough thing to do, especially too, with just the amount of changes they had on the offensive line. So it's very difficult to balance all those things with how good the defense is, how versatile they are, the different fronts that they have, the speed that they have on the back end. And that's the thing that everyone forgets about. We always talk about the DNs, but you know, guys like Lasser are some of the best cornerbacks that we have in the league, him and Stingley. So they're constantly making plays on all three levels of their defense. And that's why they're a very dangerous football team going forward, especially for the Chargers today.
when you look at the matchup, what about what Herbert can do to try and help out his offensive line going up against that defensive front of the Texans this afternoon, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It starts with Greg Roman. Greg Roman has to do a great job of calling the game in a way to protect his quarterback, to protect that offensive line, and to manage the game properly. So would not be shocked if this is a matchup that's a very low-scoring game, because Texans, the Houston Texans and the Los Angeles Chargers both want to play a very similar style, where it's ball control, rely on tough defense, be the tougher football team, and create the last play or the last opportunity at the end of the game to win. So we're going to see two teams that have very similar philosophies going up against each other right now.
All right, the late game later tonight, Matt, features the Packers laying 3 at Lambeau Field, total of 38.5 hosting the Ravens. Malik Willis, Tyler Huntley, when you look at the two backup quarterbacks, what do you expect out of them, and what do they bring to the table here?
Yeah, I mean, for the good thing is for Baltimore, right, is that, you know, Snoop can run the offense exactly the same way that Lamar Jackson does, you know. And the other aspect, too, Malik brings a little bit of a different aspect to the offense that I feel like Jordan Love doesn't, right? He can use his legs. He can get outside the pocket. He can run some of those inside zone reads as well with the running backs that they have. So Malik, I think, is one of the better backups that we have in the league, and he's really done a great job, I think, of doing some really good stuff when he has opportunities to be in that starting lineup. And expect him in that offense to really, for both quarterbacks, to operate at a normal pace and normal tempo as they usually do. And we'll see as well for those two units, just which defense helps out their quarterback more with short fields and sudden change moments.
When you look at tomorrow, when you look at Sunday afternoon, go to the late game, Eagles, Bills up in Buffalo. What are you going to keep an eye on in that matchup, Matt?
Sorry, you guys cut out on me. Can you say it one more time?
The Eagles and Bills matchup up in Buffalo tomorrow afternoon, with Philadelphia getting a 1.5 on the road. Total in the game is sitting at 44.5. What are you looking forward to in that matchup, Matt?
Yeah, I'm just really interested to see like what version of the Philadelphia Eagles offense that we see, because it does seem like the Eagles are starting to kind of put together a little bit of a game plan each and every week. They're starting to run the football a little bit more effectively. Saquon Barkley, it seems like, has gained more momentum here of late. And they really, I feel like, have found a nice recipe through their passing attack and helping their quarterback. You know, on the other side of it, I mean, hey, James Cook, right? It starts with him as well. Can they run the football effectively? It really is built around the offensive line, James Cook, and then Josh Allen just making the one or two plays that they need through the air and with his legs as well. This is going to be a fantastic matchup. Got to be looking out for Sean McDermott and just, hey, he's got to be, I think, overly aggressive at times and take some really calculated risks to slow down that Philadelphia offense and to make sure that he's giving his team the opportunity to win the game. So I look for a really fun matchup with just Sean McDermott going against the new play caller of Petullo and seeing really just what wrinkles they both throw at each other to kind of offset the other team's talent.
Matt Sims is our guest. Sims Complete Podcast. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts, as well as SiriusXM quarterback trainer on top of all of that. So I want your perspective when it comes to these two rookie quarterbacks doing battle on Sunday. Saints and Titans, New Orleans laying 2.5, totals 39.5. Cam Ward, I think we're seeing growth week after week with the Tennessee quarterback. But what do you see out of Tyler Shuck, who all of a sudden, second shot on the board for Offensive Rookie of the Year, as the Saints are road favorites in this matchup?
Man, I've been very impressed with Tyler Shuck, and really even more impressed, too, with Kellen Moore and the way that he has brought this young man along through this offense. Tyler Shuck is a very underrated athlete, but he has a really good, strong presence in the pocket and can make all the throws. And that's where, like, he could throw it outside the numbers. He could throw it down the field extremely well. And now we're getting to see what Chris Olave is all about, right? And he's one of the more talented receivers that, because of just circumstances, hasn't had a great opportunity to showcase that talent week after week. And now with Kellen Moore and Tyler Shuck, man, it's a great combination going forward. And you got to be excited for Saints fans out there too as well, right, for them to kind of end the season with this type of high note and definitely have the ability to win this game against the Tennessee Titans. Or for Cam Ward, really starting to learn how to play the NFL game. He's adjusting finally, you know, in the beginning of the year, absolutely playing like how he did in Miami, very free, very loose. As he's continued to play, you can see that he's understanding now the NFL game, how to manage the game, how to pick and choose the right moments, when to be aggressive. And both these young quarterbacks have really shown tremendous growth, especially in these last few weeks.
Matt, when you look at Bears and Niners, I want to ask you it this way. Do you think Chicago can be offensively efficient enough to keep pace to where San Francisco's offense is right now?
Man, you know, I want to say yes, but it's like, this is one of those games where it's like, you got to prove it. You got to show me. And I feel like San Francisco, what they've done this year, especially with Brock Purdy being out of the starting lineup, has been so impressive. The other aspect of it too, you know, they're missing their stars on the defensive side, right, with Warner and Bosa, and yet for whatever reason, they're still a pretty dangerous defense that could do a lot of great stuff on that side of the ball with Salah. So this is going to be a great test. I think Ben Johnson will be very aggressive running the football as much as he possibly can with Swift, with Mnungi, and really trying to protect his quarterback and first and second down as much as possible. Would not be shocked if we see a few of those trick gadget plays that Ben Johnson likes to run. And on the other side of it, can the Chicago Bears force Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy into a few of the turnovers? Because other than that, I really do believe that the 49ers will be able to march the football up and down the field on them.
All right, last one for me here, Matt. Seattle's going to Carolina. Mike McDonald has been so good on the road, but Carolina pretty good in that underdog role at home. Seattle's laying 7, totals 42.5. Which version of Bryce Young do you expect to show up in this matchup?
Well, I mean, a lot of that has to do with just the fact of like their same strategy as well. You know, you're seeing with a lot of these young quarterbacks and some guys that, you know, have had a tough go here early on in their careers, like Bryce Young, like Caleb Williams. What are their offensive coordinators and head coaches doing? They're doing a great job of not making it about them, right? They're making it about the trenches, right? Offensive, defensive fronts, you know? So for Bryce Young, hey, play game management, play smart, allow your defense to make the plays. You got great corners on the outside. Derek Brown is fantastic in the interior part of it. Allow those corners to be aggressive on the outside, and hopefully they can win in a very similar fashion, the same way that they beat the Los Angeles Rams at home.
Matt, you're out with your kids sleigh riding right now. I'm just curious, how many runs down the hill, Matt, have you taken part in?
Hey, Mateo, how many times did you go down the hill today, you think? Well, he's cold now and he's over it, but, you know, probably about 35, 40, you know, so we set a new PR today. You can add that to my resume. All right. You said all SiriusXM and ESPN and Master Sleigh Rider as well added to that resume.
Oh, I love it. It's funny when you're that age, the steps don't seem to add up when you're doing that much work. But at this age, I feel like I need an ice pack after being out in the ice. He is Matt Sims. Check him out. Sims Complete podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, at Sims Complete on X. Appreciate you doing this today, man. Happy holidays and enjoy the rest of the day with the family.
Thanks, guys. Merry Christmas. Have a good one. Thanks for having
Merry Christmas. You got it.
Great stuff there from Matt Sims. That was awesome. And by the way, in the Fenway Bowl, UConn got started very quickly with the scoring. 7-0. They're up on Army. So much for that underplay. I don't love that. I was not factoring in an opening drive touchdown by the Huskies, but that's where we stand. Army now down to a 2.5-point favorite. That total is 45.5. Right now is the best time of year for bettors, and the all-new Boomer Sportsbook is bringing you the action. Football, hockey, basketball, and more. Use code VSiN250 when you sign up for a Boomer's mobile account, and they'll match your first deposit up to $250 in bonus bets. Learn more at betwithboomer.com. Must be 21. Terms and conditions apply. Bet responsibly there. We've got the fourth quarter underway in the Pinstripe Bowl. Penn State's still up 9-3 on Clemson, but Clemson has the football from their own territory. Can they give us a dramatic finish? We'll find out on the other side. Plus, we'll preview both of the NFL games coming up today on the Saturday card right here on Live Bet Saturday.
This is Live Bet Saturday on
VSiN,
the Sports Betting Network.
It's Live Bet Saturday, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Alongside Mark Malusis, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. These 3 hours have flown by. We have a lot to get to in our final segment, including previewing the two big NFL games coming up later today. I think they're going to be pretty good, by the way. Houston and the Chargers, two great defenses, two quarterbacks that it feels like they don't want them to be overexposed, throwing the ball around too much. So I anticipate a really old school matchup. Right now, it's the Chargers laying 1.5, which is a slight flip of the favorites. We open with Houston -1, Mark. Total's gone up from 39.5 to 40.5, which I don't really understand. I am on the under in this one, But before we get to a full breakdown, let's hear from the head coach of the Texans, DeMeco Ryans, talking about taking on this Chargers team.
Definitely a playoff game. It was a playoff game for us last week, understanding the importance of us getting that win. It was huge last week, and that's where you want to be in December. You want to be playing meaningful games, and that's what this team has earned. And so every week from here on out, like, how can you continue to improve your position? Right now, this is the play.
It's been a wild ride for DeMeco Ryans this year. The 0-3 start, the bounce back, the miracle comeback against Jacksonville, which I feel like really sparked this turn where they've become one of the more dominant teams in the AFC. You and I both believe in them to win the AFC. I have a ticket on Ryans to be coach of the year. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it'll close at a much better number or much shorter number than I bet it at 150-1. But you got to give that guy credit, Moose. I mean, it looked like he was left for dead at the beginning of the year, and he's figured this thing out.
Yeah, it did. You're 100% correct. And they're trending in the right direction. What you want to be as a football team is playing your best football toward the tail end of the season. And that's exactly what the Houston Texans are doing. And that defense is as legit as there is in the National Football League. Going to be a fun game today. You know, Matt's with you. He hit upon it earlier, Dustin, where, you know, last segment where he said he'd probably lean more the under in the game, more of a low scoring affair. Here's what I do know. I mean, Jim Harbaugh is not an idiot, right? So he's going to put together a game plan, he and his staff, to try and keep the Los Angeles Chargers in this game, which is not a far reach in any way, shape, or form. You know, this game is basically a pick'em, can go any single way. I just think the Texans' defensive unit is the best unit that will take the field this afternoon in Los Angeles. I take them plus one. I take them on the money line. I've taken them in future bets. That's why I like them this afternoon against the Los Angeles Chargers. And as long as C.J. Stroud doesn't turn the football over two or three times, that offense, I think it's going to be a Texans day out in L.A.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I'm on the under in this game. If I was betting a side, I'd look at Houston in this spot. It's just a bad matchup. It's a great front for Houston going up against a banged up offensive line. So Herbert's going to be limited, but also the run game's going to be limited for the Chargers. I'm anticipating a lot of punts in this game. DeMeco Ryans, 31-19 to the under in his career, 15-19 to the under as a dog. Jim Harbaugh, he is pretty good at covering numbers at home with the Chargers, 10-14 against the spread at home, 9-3 against spread as a home favorite. But I think this is a very different team. To me, the total jumps out to me. I think 41 is way too high. I don't see us getting close to that in this game. So that's where we stand with the early game, the late one, Baltimore and Green Bay. We've seen this one move. Packers laying 3, down to 2.5, 3 still at some shops. Total, big old drop-off. Once we found out it'd be backup versus backup, Malik Willis taking on Snoop Huntley from 46.5 down to 37.5. Let's hear from Matt LaFleur, who talked about on the preparation for this game, whether it be Lamar Jackson or Snoop Huntley, under center for Baltimore.
I still see both those guys are extremely athletic. The one thing that's unique, I would say, about them versus maybe some other teams is they're gonna run their offense because both of those guys are capable of, you know, they're beating with your arm or they can beat you with their legs. So there's a lot of similarities. I would say there's more similarities than not. Certainly Lamar's, I mean, he's been an MVP of this league. So we all know the type of talent that he has. And it's just not, you know, those two guys, they've got multiple weapons. When you talk about Derrick Henry, Zay Flowers, the tight end, both tight ends are dynamic players. So I think their offensive line is one of the better ones in the league.
What do you make of this one, Moose? Packers laying 3, yeah. Total of 38.
Yeah, first off, I mean, Snoop Huntley, like him as a backup quarterback. At their peak, he's not what Lamar Jackson is. Like, and so, like, and we have not seen that version of Lamar Jackson this year. I get it. But there are limitations to when he is the quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens. With that being said, I understand where the premise stands. I lean Green Bay because of the defense, even without Micah Parsons, that Jeff Hafley and company, they're home, they're laying 3. Both teams have been brutal against the spread this season. Baltimore is 5-10, Green Bay 6-9 on the season against the spread. But I'd lean Packers in this game, even though, you know, the importance for this game for the Green Bay Packers was lessened with Detroit's performance, obviously on Christmas Day against the Minnesota Vikings, where they lost the game and turned the football over left and right. Packers defense leads the way. I think Malik Willis and company do enough. Baltimore Ravens defense has not been particularly good all season long. That's why I'd side with Green Bay, Dustin, in this one.
Yeah, I lean Green Bay. I have a player prop that I like in this one. I want Emmanuel Wilson, the running back, over 29.5 rush yards. It's up to 33.5. I still kind of like the over at that point. It's just, you know, Josh Jacobs is so vital to their success, especially with the missing pieces on defense. Without Wyatt, without Parsons now, they're going to need to rely on that run game more in the playoffs. That's what they care about. This game against Baltimore, not so much. I think Wilson's popped in limited opportunity. I don't think he needs very many carries. He had 14 for 82 last week against Chicago. Let's ride Emmanuel Wilson, where I think they put Josh Jacobs on ice and try and get him healthy for the playoffs here. So I like that a lot. I also would lean with you on Green Bay. Matt LaFleur, 20-11 against the spread as a home favorite of 7 or less in his career. I don't like him as a road favorite. I love him as a home favorite. And I think it might be quitting season when it comes to Baltimore right now. I'm not sure they're all in with where this season has gone and what the expectations were coming into the year. All right, that's where we stand with that. A little fun thing I wanted to throw your way, Mark, with futures is something that Preston, our producer, and I came up with, which is our holiday bet exchange, because it's a couple days after Christmas. You're sitting there with your gift. You're going, all right, I want to return this gift. But you know what you find out? If you don't have the receipt, the prices aren't the same. So these are the futures that I bet this year that I want to go to the sports book and exchange. I would love to take my Lions 16-1 to win the Super Bowl, which, let's be fair, the way things have shaken out this year, not only are they not making the playoffs, but is this like one of the greatest missed opportunities we've seen in a long time? No Kansas City in the playoffs. Green Bay loses Parsons. It felt like the sea opened up for Detroit to make a run here. And every time there was a challenge, they fell short. So if I could exchange a Super Bowl ticket on the Lions right now, I'm not getting the best number, but I would take a little on the 49ers at 13-1. Do you think even with no defense, San Fran in a wide open NFL, do you think they can make a run to the Super Bowl?
I think they can. You know what? And I interviewed Brian Baldinger the other day. I think they're flying under the radar in the NFC. Everybody talks about everybody else other than San Francisco. And there's Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh putting everything together. And as we just discussed with Matt Sims, Dustin, they can score on anybody. Like, they really can. I mean, that offense is ridiculously efficient, and they dealt with the injury with Brock Purdy. I think San Francisco is going to be a very, very dangerous team come playoff time.
All right, the next bet that I'd like to exchange in the holiday bet exchange, I was celebrating Jonathan Taylor, Offensive Player of the Year, at 27-1 for most of the season, and then Daniel Jones got hurt, and he now has no shot at winning this award. JSN's a heavy favorite, although it's come down a little bit. Right now, the second shot's Puka Nacua at +170. That would be the bet. If I was betting in that market to exchange my Offensive Player of the Year, is to look at Puka Nacua the rest of the way, although I don't know if the awards voters are going to give it to him based on some off-the-field stuff lately.
And probably not. And then up until about 7 games ago, you were like sitting on the golden ticket with Jonathan Taylor, 27-1. Basically, you wouldn't trade that thing in for anything. Like, basically, he was unbelievable in the last 7 games. The wheels have come off.
Yeah, the next one here, Offensive Rookie of the Year. Emeka Ibuka, had him 14-1. I'd now trade him out for a guy who I have 60-1 that I bet during the draft. Tyler Shuck is 4-1. I think this thing is wide open. Bet. I'm not sure. By the way, I hated the bet from the second I placed it. Never thought it would come to fruition. But here we are with Tyler Shuck, a chance to. I think he can win this award, Mark.
I think he can. I'm with you. You bet him draft night. When he got drafted by the Saints, you got him 60-1. That is an unbelievable bet, Dustin. Proud as a peacock.
The second he was selected, I said, I think he stinks. I don't see it. But if he's going to go to the Saints in the second round, they're going to play him. And somehow this market's been wide open. Then the last one, college football national champion. I loved LSU. I was dead wrong. I think Oregon's got a path at 7.5-1 where they're angry. Yeah. And I think people are writing them off when their one loss is to Indiana, who's number one in the country.
Yeah, I agree with you about Oregon. I agree with you. And I think last year they were built up a little bit too much. I think this year, I think they're undervalued when you're looking at the Ducks.
Man, this show flew by. That's the holiday bet exchange. We've got more bowl coverage coming all day
long.
That
is a great idea.
Coming up later today, I also like Georgia Tech in the Pop-Tart Bowl coming up in 30 minutes. I know, Mark, you like the delay in the 2.5 with the Saints tomorrow?
I do. Love the Saints tomorrow, laying the 2.5.
All right, if you're looking,
Tyler Shuck, I believe.
Let's go. Hey, Live Bet Saturday rolls on. You got Brad Taylor, Will Hill coming your way next.